Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 17th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature a discussion with Peter Carlino and Matthew Demchek of Gaming and Leisure Properties on how REITs and gaming are perfect together. This week's program is brought to you by Konami Gaming. Later in the show, we'll be talking about a Konami creation that keeps reaching more and more properties year after year, so stay tuned. Brother's got a night to keep you cottoning around. Real estate investment trusts have been used in many industries, including much of the hospitality industry. But gaming remained untouched until Peter Carlino spun off Gaming and Leisure Properties Incorporated from Penn National in 2013. When the transaction immediately produced value for both Penn and GLPI shareholders, the race was on. Both Caesars and MGM created their own REITs. Carlino and then Matthew Demchek, the Senior Vice President and Chief Investment Officer for GLPI, explains why REITs make a lot of sense in the gaming industry and why the potential for gaming REITs is still growing. They met with me and editor Frank Legato in early February from the GLPI offices in Reading, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Our guests today are Peter Carlino and Matthew Demchek of GLPI. Guys, thanks for joining us. It's great to see you, and we're really interested to hear what you have to say about REITs in the gaming industry.
Well, good morning, and we're pleased to be here.
Well, you know, Peter, I think the first time I met you, you were speaking at one of our Racino shows back in the mid-90s, and you had one little racetrack and a casino, and now you built that into a billion-dollar company, and then you invented the gaming REIT, and now GLPI is one of the biggest gaming REITs in the country. So it's really great to have you here, and I guess that's why you're one of the members of the Hall of Fame there in the gaming industry, so it's great to have you. So let me start out. When Starwood owned Caesars in the late 90s, there was a lot of talk about REITs and in the gaming industry, but nothing really came of it. How did GLPI find the right formula when Starwood could not?
Frankly, we just did it.
Yeah.
It took several years of very complex work, working through the IRS to get a structure that could fly. And look, it made all the sense in the world. Now, I must confess, it has been infinitely more successful than I could have imagined.
Yeah.
It was simply a matter of a commitment to continue to build shareholder value. And it was a surprise to me as a major shareholder of Penn National that all this value lay unopened just below the surface. So
sure.
We kind of moved it across the street and found that there's a real business here.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. We're also here with Frank Legato, our editor who's writing the story. Frank, why don't you take the next few questions?
Okay, could you compare for me the competitive advantage, if there is one, of operating as a REIT as opposed to a wholly owned entity? What do you feel are the main advantages to operators?
Well, for the operator, it's a long-term capital source that it's kind of forever. Mm-hmm. Imagine having a loan, if you will, that you never have to pay off. Think about it that way. It's flexibility. Matt, you love to talk about that. Why don't you take a few moments on the advantages?
Sure. Yeah. So when you think about our business, Frank, I mean, we're almost in a sense like a bank. I mean, we raise money very efficiently and then we put it out at some spread. And, you know, I come from the real estate world. And in that world, when this asset class came out, there were a lot of questions. Is this really an asset class? Is it financial engineering? And you look at the bottom line of what we've been able to deliver at GLPI over these many years, and it's exceeded in stability and in growth a number of companies with similar business models. So it's the real deal. And that's allowed us to now get debt at rates that are unheard of. So we can source. We just did a debt deal for 10-year debt, unsecured by anything at 3.32% just a few months ago. We can raise equity very efficiently. We just did an overnight offering. We can raise hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars efficiently overnight. And by packaging that with an audience that really wants these durable cash flows and values them in isolation, we can give the operators incredible prices for real estate. So you think about the Cosmopolitan. Look where that traded, a 5 cap rate. I mean, it's amazing to think, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, that something like that would have been possible would be unheard of. But it's really this chapter in the evolution of the asset class. And for us, it's really interesting having Peter and the team's pedigree from the gaming world in the REIT world. We actually have competitive advantages of our own. So we have a bit of a moat. I mean, you know, the licensing process and all the things that go into owning casinos in a lot of these states is very onerous, and it's not for the faint of heart. And the traditional real estate people look at this business and oftentimes say, whoa, you get risk adjusted returns that are incredible, but I don't want to get my hands dirty and go through the process and my board and everyone else. So we sit in at an interesting intersection between a lot of capital that loves these kinds of returns and gives the operators great, efficient, permanent equity, to Peter's point, but also in the real estate world is kind of one of the few shows in town that can actually pull it off. So it's a great position to be in.
Now, your REIT is in a constant state of growth. Do you foresee a time when the gaming REIT market might be saturated and you might diversify into other types of properties?
You know, that's probably the most common question we've gotten since we did the spin in 2013. The quick answer is, yeah, I suppose someday, but we're a long way, I think, from hitting the end. Mm-hmm. Look, there are not an infinite number of transactions floating out in the market on any given day. They really are not. However, we've managed over these last years since 2013 to this very day. You saw the recent transaction we did with the Cordish company. That wasn't there 5 years ago. Wasn't there 3 years ago. Wasn't there maybe last year. It's ready when it's ready. And our job, of course, is to be mining for opportunities as we find them. So I think the runway is still there. It's going to be, it's not like a Starbucks where we could say, look, we're going to open X stores this year, so many next year, and it grows exponentially. You know, you have to sort of fight for every deal you get one at a time. But no, I think that world is still there. Will we be someplace else someday? Probably. But so far, look, we're in a space that is, dare I say, bulletproof. Our rents, we collected through the worst of times 100% of all of our rents. We know perfectly well that entertainment is the last thing people give up. I mean, maybe they got to go to a restaurant and get a meal, but people don't give up their entertainments. And this even Las Vegas, dare I say, I was a little more pessimistic, but even Las Vegas has come back in a huge way, a huge way. You got to make a conscious judgment to go there as compared with the kind of places that our companies own, which are the neighborhood store. They're right down the road. They're within 30 minutes away on average, that kind of thing. So we can't think of of another business source as bulletproof as what we currently have. But that's a long answer to say, yeah, someday maybe, but we'll see.
Now, there are operators that the multi-property operators that will sell one property to a REIT and keep other as their own real estate. What's the reasoning behind that, if you find?
Well, there's potentially a lot of reasons. For example, without naming names, there are companies that have had long-held assets that we'd love to get our hands on and participate with. But frankly, the basis in those assets is so low that the tax bill is so high that it just doesn't make sense. So it's a lot easier, I think, for companies to look at this as an acquisition vehicle. That's not to say you can't sell something in your portfolio. We've done some of that as well. But it's a lot easier to think about as an acquisition vehicle. Anything you want to add to that, Matt?
Yeah, I think that's right. And you'll see a mix of, I mean, we've done a few transactions. I think the Cordish one's really interesting. If you saw the deal we did a few months ago with operators that have owned their assets for a while. Cordish developed the Maryland Live property on their own years ago. And, you know, in that case, had their own rationale and reasons for doing the deal with us, primarily for tax purposes. We're thinking about long-term gains and how those might change year to year, but also thinking holistically about how they might augment their business in the long run. And I think that's one of the themes that really ties in to your question. Over time, why do people do these deals? And everything we do is effectively some bespoke solution to what someone wants. So in the rest of real estate, usually there's like a guy that buys six Walmarts or a few facilities, puts them together, calls up Eastdil and says, hey, can you market this portfolio? And then the other REITs that don't do gaming all bid, and they get in a feeding frenzy and they bid on that as presented. We tend to create deals. I mean, we start with a blank clean slate. We sit with the counterparty. We try to solve for everything they're trying to accomplish, not just financially, but with their business model over time. And we make it fit the strike zone that we have as a public company. And over our history, it's interesting. There's a presentation you can look at on our website that articulates each of our historical transactions. Everything on that page was a one-off, direct, somehow off-market, not brokered transaction, where we ultimately solved something very creative and difficult for a counterparty. You look back, and Peter could speak to it better, but having a hostile takeover of a public company's real estate, if you look back to the pinnacle and how that played out, thinking about Carl Icahn doing a transaction with multiple public companies at the same time, or this Cordish transaction. I mean, the Cordish Group family companies have been around for 110 years. In that time, they've only sold properties. They never entered into an ongoing sale leaseback with anyone, 110 years. And they picked us. And it wasn't because it was the best price. It was because it was the best choice, in their words. And our job day to day is really to know what's going on in the market, but also appreciate what we can do to solve things for people in new and creative ways, just like we were creatively the first REIT in existence doing what we do.
Mm-hmm. On that Cordish deal, there was one unique aspect of it was the arrangement of future financing help with future acquisitions. Do you see that as perhaps a new trend in this area?
I don't know if it's a trend, but it's something, of course, we wanted. I mean, obviously, it's creating an opportunity for us and for them going forward. And it could conceivably include some of their non-gaming assets. They have massive live operations similar to what they have in Maryland and Philadelphia and so forth around the country and ambitions with that, in addition to what they look at in the casino world. So, yeah, we want to be their go-to partner. A point I'll make, people ask, you know, how you doing relative to others. We don't compete for any transaction. The only thing we ever bid on, frankly, was MGP. And the reason was simply I had been well down the road for several years, a couple of years, with those folks about a purchase of something when, in fact, obviously they had some changes at the board level and then they decided to auction it. Well, we decided we'd at least make an effort, knowing probably that we would not be, you know, as I like to say, in most auctions, the winner loses. And we didn't plan to lose. We looked at it exhaustively. It would have been nice to have those assets. Made a very disciplined decision not to bid beyond what we thought was healthy. And we walked. But by and large, every single transaction we have done, everyone, is one that we either initiated or had as a private negotiation, period, to solve, as Matt said, some issue for the seller. And that has worked very, very well for us. That's kind of what we do. We're really not in the auction business.
Okay, so far we've been talking about commercial casinos. Is there an application for REITs in the tribal world? And if so, how would that differ from a commercial gaming REIT agreement?
Well, the issue is, unless I'm missing something, pretty much the same. It's how do you perfect the security with the assets that you got. I mean, there are some things, frankly, we're looking at right now. And we think there are some approaches. I think we, like others, have burned a lot of brain cells trying to figure out how to get there
right,
safely.
Sure.
That's a big, big issue. And it may be possible. It may be possible. So quite candidly, we're working on that right now. Stay tuned. We'll see what might evolve. But we're no different than the gaming companies. It really gets down to, you know, can we lend to these organizations safely.
Right, right. And of course,
and be secure.
Of course, it's on tribal land, so you get into some legal issues there as well, I would imagine.
It's all about that. Right. Yes, correct.
Right, right. Okay. So, so far, REITs have been applicable to existing properties. Do you ever envision a day when an operator might partner with a REIT to build a brand new property?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We could easily imagine that. In fact, we had offered to participate in Massachusetts with several bidders, people who might have been able to secure a license. And yeah, we'd like to fund it. You'll see us pretty much everywhere as and if new licenses evolve. Yeah, we look, There's no way you can screw up a greenfield opportunity in a limited license state if you spend wisely and proportionate to the market.
Right.
So if you are, as we are, disciplined spenders, if you will, mm-hmm. Investors, it's a wonderful opportunity. And yeah, we would expect to be there.
Okay.
With theoretically, we could be with several bidders, mm-hmm. any one of whom might win, and we could participate and would.
Sure.
But frankly, that gets down to our ability to underwrite the casino opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Konami's award-winning Synchros is the casino management system of choice for some of the industry's most innovative operators. Many have chosen Synchros in recent years. Operators like River Casinos in Pennsylvania and New York, Desert Diamond Casinos in Arizona, Golden Entertainment with 10 casinos across the U.S., Carnival Corporation and Norwegian Cruise Lines, Las Vegas' newest strip mega resort, Resorts World Las Vegas, and it was selected by the nation's largest casino on the West Coast with over 6,500 slot machines and an amazing new resort hotel. To start speaking with the Konami team about Synchros and why so many casinos are choosing it, visit KonamiGaming.com/connect.
How do you approach casinos that want to expand under your ownership of the real estate? Do you participate in that, or do you negotiate a different deal with that? How does that work?
Well, we're always encouraging our partners, if you will, the operators, to consider us as they think about new things.
Mm-hmm.
I think this year there's a reasonable possibility you're going to see us involved with a couple of hotels. We'll see. It's the kind of thing that would be appealing to us. For the most part, at scale, not much has occurred that would have required our funding with any of our tenants,
right?
For the most part.
Mm-hmm.
As it happens, we're doing funding a landside development for Bally's down in Baton Rouge.
Right.
That was one of the TRS properties that we operated ourselves. We kept one of the two,
right.
Prairieville in Maryland and that one. And as we just have transferred that to Bally's, we kept the contract and have done the design and construction for what comes next. So in that case, we're actually designing it, building it, and funding this whole landside movement in Baton Rouge. It's a terrific project. So that's kind of cool.
Okay. So speaking of Bally's, you recently reached a deal with them to sell the Tropicana. Are you actually getting out of that completely, selling the real estate back to them?
Oh, we're going to keep the ground.
Okay.
And it's a ground lease with the okay. cash
so
up
they're,
front.
They're just going to operate.
Why don't you just take a quick walk through that?
Oh, yeah. So we got the asset, you probably know from right. background, Penn during COVID.
Right.
Created a new structure that hadn't been done before and gave them rent credits instead of cash. So it bought them, call it 5 months of rent. And then opted to create this ground lease where Bally's is going to step in. So they're going to give us money up front to effectively buy the improvements or enter the lease, however you want to look at it. And then we've got on paper a 50-year term of them paying us rent and operating the casino. And they'll effectively be leasing the whole footprint of that site to 35.1 acres.
Okay. So Sue Kim was talking about, changes to the property, everything from a renovation to a teardown. How does that affect your relationship with Bally's?
Maybe favorably.
Yeah.
In any case, we encourage whatever they want to do there. We get paid on our ground lease regardless. But I'd be honest, in any opportunity we would have to participate in something they might choose to do would be potentially terrific. Mm-hmm. We'd love to be supportive and be there for them. So, but I think Sue has given you the truth about where he is now, considering all possibilities.
Sure.
And they haven't alighted on a plan. So
right.
I expect, though, they will.
Right.
And the beauty of our position is win-win. You collect the rent, or if something really noteworthy happens and you deem it appropriate to put your capital out, win even more.
Sure. So I guess you'd be excited about having a baseball stadium on the property as well, huh?
Yeah, the answer would be absolutely. It'd be terrific. Great site for that.
I'd love to see the A's.
And we've
Vegas.
Been very supportive of that.
For sure. Absolutely.
Well, look, we are here to support our tenants, period. We want to be the go-to company. In fact, we want to be the REIT of choice for folks that are forward-looking.
Sure. So Peter, you were once a casino operator. It sounds like when you go into a partnership with these guys, you examine their marketing strategy, their operations, and things like that. And if you don't agree with it, you probably wouldn't go into business with them. But these companies, change leadership all the time. Do you have a role then if they go in a direction you don't really want them to go in?
Well, that's part of securing adequate coverage up front.
Sure.
We work pretty hard to make certain that we have pretty broad coverage, multiples of what is needed to cover our lease.
Right.
We have walked away from a number of opportunities where either we felt the management wasn't strong, so mm-hmm. we do that underwriting and just felt it wasn't safe, or a market that we knew to be less than certain. I mean, it's one advantage I think we bring to the REIT world that an outsider might not, and that is the ability to underwrite markets, properties, their future. But to your real point, if you had an owner who did something stupid,
right.
Well, sounds like you're going to be calling in that lease and finding a new operator.
Right.
And we have protections to do that.
Yeah.
That's the last resort. But
sure.
No, I think for the most part, we've been very cautious and have good operators across the board, the best in the United States. And I think we're pretty safe.
Absolutely.
Do you feel there are any external factors, government regulation, inflation, the overall economy, that pose risks to investors for investing in a REIT?
Well, inflation is an ugly risk of sorts, I suppose. Matt, why don't you play with that one? One of your favorite subjects.
Well, you guys have watched what the Fed's done, and it's a little unprecedented. Historically, if you look at triple net REITs, which is the sector that we're part of, when rates go up, they kind of act like bonds. They go down just based on your discounting the cash flows differently. But what's different for us, we've got a couple of things working for us, even with inflation, which are very unique. One is we're probably, I don't know, pick the inning, 3, 4, maybe 5, probably 4, of at least a 9-inning game of these assets getting on the radar of institutional investors. So to date, Blackstone's, I don't know if dabble is the right word, but invested in scale in a few assets on the Strip. But beyond that, we haven't seen a lot of their brethren jump in, get into regional markets, et cetera. And you can look back over history, manufactured housing, self-storage, data centers, cell phone towers. There's a plethora of real estate asset classes that started like we did. It's kind of off the radar, that had very, very great bottom line results for a number of years that ultimately everyone flooded into. When I started, apartments were the holy grail, and manufactured housing was a forgotten asset class no one wanted to visit because it was trailer parks. Fast forward 20 years and it's flipped. The manufactured housing, it trades at a far higher multiple than any of the apartments because people get it. It takes people some time to get it. People are starting to get us. There's a lot to go. So we've got this virtuous tailwind of more people getting the joke. And we're, by virtue of that working out and resonating, going to get more upside. The second thing is pretty interesting. Because we haven't been on the radar as much and institutionalized, a lot of the debt we have on our balance sheet, it was struck back when we were off the radar. So a lot of it's like 5%, above 5%. And, the reason a lot of the triple nets typically trade off is they have to refi their debt. They go from 3% to 4% because rates went up. Guess what? If rates go to 4% for us, we're refining 5%. So we actually still have a lot of kind of gas in the tank from refining favorably. So we have two tailwinds that are unique for us that don't count for the rest of the triple net REITs right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as I said at the outset, you would well appreciate our revenues are bulletproof. It's always been a mystery to me that our regional properties are not as well valued as properties on the Strip. Look, there are marvelous properties in Las Vegas on the Strip, which required vast investments of capital for, frankly, in most cases, substandard returns. They don't approach the kind of returns that I got at Penn National in Columbus or Toledo. We go through a whole list of new facilities we built ground up. So you got to figure out what business you're in. I'm in the cash on cash business, always have been. That's the way we think about it. So the regional assets have long been undervalued. Get on our website, take a look. You know many of our properties. They're spectacular. Now, look, it's not the win, but they're beautiful by any measure. They're secure, they're powerful, and they're there forever. So getting the broader market and the world of investors to understand just what we got is not moved as quickly as I think it should have, because if you look back through the 08 crisis, we were essentially unaffected by any of these downturns. And the COVID mess, again, once never missed a dime in rent. So to Matt's point, it clearly is going to take a little longer for people to figure out what we are and what we have, and it's bulletproof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to Peter's point, there are a couple of REITs that were more recently formed that have really high multiples, and their whole business model is owning operationally essential profit center real estate. And that theme's resonated with folks. You all know our sector well enough and how stable these cash flows are. We're the poster child. Not only that, we're mission critical to state budgets. I mean, a lot of these other parts of real estate are cost centers, right? One way or another, the government's spending money to help the operator. You think about healthcare to subsidize the operator through COVID. Ours are the opposite. They have to balance their state budgets. You all know how much tax is produced in these four walls. It's more tax beneficial than anything else in existence. So we're actually on the same side with the government. Can you imagine that? With the real estate that has effectively between us a monopoly in the local markets, it's pretty amazing. So to Peter's point, as this resonates in the world that I come from, it's inevitable we're going to continue to rate more favorably.
Okay, just to wrap things up with the big question that this article is about, are gaming REITs good for industry growth in general, and where do you see it going in the near future?
Oh, I think they're terrific for growth. Again, remember, we are a long-term source of financing. The Cordish deal, I think, of the initial term, and that was only limited by what the IRA, if they could have signed a 100-year deal, they would have done it. And I mean a 100-year deal. So I think our initial term, if I recall, Matt, is 39 years with options that are essentially not, I mean, that will be renewed. Because what else in this world can do that? They don't have to worry. Up and down, you know, the vagaries of the economy don't matter. They've got a fixed arrangement. It's predictable. It's certain. It doesn't get pulled. Nothing bad can happen. Not now, not 10 years from now, not 50 years from now. So, yeah, we are a special source of financing for gaming operators. And I think this will continue to expand and expand.
Okay. Great.
Matt? I'm in agreement with all those points. And it's going to be very interesting in these next 5 to 10 years to see what operators, as this business model has been proven, want to jump in and get a piece of it to help really fuel the business, their business growth. I mean, we're capital that helps them expand, do all the things you're talking about, build new facilities. We'll see what states might legalize over the next 5 or 10 years. It seems inevitable, if you look at the headlines in the last 5 years, that the REITs will play a role in a lot of that. And we've carved out a piece, to Peter's point, of mindshare in the market as being the go-to for a collaborative, maybe friendly is the word, but a partner in their business. And I'd encourage everyone to take a look at the Cordish press release for an example of just what that means to an operator and what their business can be with us.
Right, exactly. So do you see other gaming REITs getting into the business? I mean, you know, the two giants now are you and Vici and everybody else. Well, I don't want to say Blackstone's a runner-up, but do you see any other companies getting into this?
They're trying. Back to the point about it's not for the faint of heart. I mean, at least one EPR has made it very public that they wanted to and were aggressively pursuing things in the space. Remember, though, there's only a few places you can own real estate without going through licensure and the regulatory process. When I came here, and you all are used to this, it just astounded me. Our CEO, our general counsel, our meeting with governors, and meeting with regulatory commissions at the state level. This is not an easy thing to thread the needle on. This is a very, very onerous process. And for a REIT to say, I want 5% of my portfolio, 10% to be in gaming, is the juice worth the squeeze to jump over all those hurdles? Whereas when we wake up every morning, that's what we do. We are a gaming REIT, right? Sure. And it's going to be challenging for many to do it in scale. And if someone started tomorrow with all the money in the world, they could never, ever replicate the portfolio we already have.
Right, right.
And you know how we were formed.
We're the largest owner of gaming assets in the United States, GLPI.
Wow. That's pretty.
And that makes us the best buyer.
On a regional basis. There's nobody that has more regional properties than we.
Right.
And you think about our tenants who want to buy new properties. The fact that we already have a lease with them and we can just fold properties in. Everything's negotiated. We've already come to an agreement in terms. It makes it so much easier. So we've effectively got a first mover advantage on that front too. So Store Capital owns a couple little casinos. I think Cripple Creek. EPR has talked about getting in the space. I suspect over time, investors go to the companies and say, well, why don't you own this yet? I did all this work. This is actually the best thing since sliced bread. Over time, I think others will kind of try to get in. But, you know, we own the majority of the houses in the right neighborhood.
Right.
So it's, again, a win-win.
Great. Well, gentlemen, thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And I'm really looking forward to this article. I think it's going to open a lot of people's eyes. You know, they've just been seeing the top level here. And you really guys have really drilled down for us and explained why it's good for the industry. So thanks for the time. We really appreciate it. And good luck in the future.
Well, thank you very much. It's been fun to be part of this industry. You know, here we are in Reading, Pennsylvania. As a kid growing up in the, you know, in a row house in Philadelphia, who would have imagined that we'd have these pandas right across the parking lot? Here right. We are. What a great world it is. So we thank you for taking the time.
Absolutely. Thank you, Peter and Matt. Good to talk to you guys, and we'll stay in touch.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. In the middle of our- I remember where we came and everything was soon when we would have such a very good time, such a fine time, such a happy time.
Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks again to Konami Gaming. Head to KonamiGaming.com/connect to start speaking with Konami's top Synchros representatives about your 2022 technology goals. To learn more about REITs, including a story in the March issue featuring GLPI and Vici, the two major gaming REITs, visit GGBMagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry delivered to your desktop every Monday morning, sign up at ggbnews.com and use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Sign up on Apple Podcasts or Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast. In the middle of our house was our castle and our king. Sleep.